Good evening, everyone. I'm Trish England, and welcome to Race Talk with Trish, sponsored by Dave Wolin and the Racing History Project. Did you know all our shows are recorded and you can listen to them forever on the Racing History Project website, www.racinghistoryproject.com? We've got a really special event tonight. An outstanding group of IMSA GTU drivers, probably never before seen in one place at the same time, except on the track. The GTU category of the IMSA GT series started out when IMSA had two GT classes, over and under 3 liters. As more classes were added, GTU became its own category, sometimes with standalone races, and was dominated first by Datsun and then by Mazdas. Tonight we have 1990 GTU champ Lance Stewart, three-time GTU champ Jack Baldwin, multiple race winners Jeff Klein, Rick Noop, and Amos Johnson. I know some of you gentlemen co-drove at some endurance races, raced against each other at other times. We're looking forward to some exciting stories, and we'll try to make time for some questions near the end of the hour. So you folks in the audience, please mute your phones, and let's hear what these guys have to say. And when you speak later in the conversations, please think to identify yourself occasionally. I don't know about anybody else, but I can't always tell who's who. So let's hear a story. Is Amos with us? Hello? Okay. I don't think he's with us yet, but he is out there in the wings. So I'm going to ask Jack Baldwin to say, if you know, start us off. Jack? Am I still on at all?
Jeff Klein's here.
Hello. I'm getting dead air. Is anybody hearing me?
This is Lance. I hear you.
This is Jeff Klein. I hear you.
Okay.
I hear you. Serious
dead air. Jack, are you there? Apparently not. Jeff, would you like to start us off? I'm sorry,
sure.
People, we're having a moment.
Well, this is Jeff Klein, and anyway, I was lucky enough to drive in GTU from 1979 to 1985, and I drove with a lot of people from Jim Meter, Don Sherman, Walt Borum, Bill Cole, John Morton, Mandeville, Johnson, Dunham, Vardy, Baldwin. So I drove with pretty much everyone. I miss Rick Noop, but just about everyone else. And I won 10 GTU races out of 60 that I drove in. So I don't know if that's a story or not, but and I drove 11 different GTU cars during that period. So there aren't many RX-7s out there that I didn't drive.
Got that information, go ahead and just dial into that.
Dave, we can hear you. Okay.
So anyway, probably Jack Baldwin was an interesting co-driver. He and I drove for a year at Malibu Grand Prix, and I co-drove with him in the longer races in the RX-7, and then he co-drove with me in the non-conflicting races in a Camel Light car that Malibu ran. But I'm like 5'7", 5'8", if I lie, somewhere between there. And Jack's big. I don't know what he is, but he's big and he's not lightweight. He's not fat, but he's muscular. So it was an interesting thing, a seat insert that looked like a Barca lounger when we would drive together. And,
That number seven, RX-7. Was that the one that came from Jim Downing?
No. The 75 that Baldwin drove is the one that came from him.
That was a hot car.
that was a good car. It won a lot of races. I know Jack won a lot of races in it. And then after Jack was done with it, Tommy Kendall got his feet wet in it and did well in it. So, you know, I mean, that was a pretty good car, but Clayton was a pretty exceptional preparer too.
Yeah.
I mean, Clayton Cunningham ran a really professional outfit.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good. But what I was saying is, Jack, if I didn't get out of the car quick enough on a driver change, Jack would grab me by the epaulets on my driving suit and drag me out. A couple of times I wrapped up in a ball against the wall. So he was kind of interesting that way.
Oh, no.
He was a good guy, but not the best teammate in the world. But he was fast. He's a great co-driver. And we had a lot of fun that year doing different things. So I think Brad Hand, who was working for Clayton at the time, put some acetylene in his headlights of his rental car. And when he turned on the headlights, they both exploded and basically sandpapered the back end of the car that was in front of them. So we did a lot of stuff like that. Yeah. Boys will be boys, right?
Yeah.
Especially
with, I can do one whole segment, episode of this show on just rental cars.
Yeah, you probably should.
I think I should.
Yeah.
Anybody that wants to get involved in that one, let me know. Who wants to go next?
This is Rick New.
Hey, Rick.
Yeah, hi, you guys. My GTU involvement was kind of interesting. I'll give you a fast little synopsis. I started in a car called the Slug, which Jeff Klein's very aware of, and it's I'm from the San Francisco region of the SCCA, and I'd been driving some vintage races, some McLarens and some big horsepower deals, and then all of a sudden I thought it was time to maybe go in some organized racing because I had a knack for it. So John Norman, I got involved with these sedans, and I won a championship up in the San Francisco region in his green car. And I know, Jeff, you're very aware of that car. You guys all ran.
Yeah, I raced against it, yeah.
Yeah, I know you did. So then I came in a different way. I was lucky enough to drive a George Dyer car in 1978 that Busby prepared. And I drove with Steve Earle, Bob Aiken. And the long story short, end up going to Le Mans and – I came back, and there was a that year in 78, they had the World Endurance Championship, and you'd accrue points in the RS series. And to shorten the story up, I met Brant Dole, and Brant Dole built a car with Dave Kent. And once I met Dave Kent and created Parkcraft, I started the George Boskoffs and Joe Cavallari and Clayton. And it was quite a group of people, as we all know, from the Playa del Rey area, kind of the Al Bartz, even where those guys were still around. And I came in to drive the GTU category with Bob Bergstrom. And I was running parts for Dave Kent on a Harley Davidson, doing anything to kind of stay in the game. And Bob Bergstrom and I won the Pabst 500 at Elkhart Lake in the BDR X7. And anyway, that was kind of my first victory. I've always been blessed, you can say, to have some really great cars. Did I run a whole season of GTU? Yes, I did in 83. But in the meantime, from 79 to 82, I hadn't driven with as many different partners as Jeff has, but it was Lee Mueller, Ron Grable, Kathy Rood, Joe Vardy. Walt Boren and I won a couple of races together. So Dave Kent was just a complete maestro in building reliable race cars. And I did an awful lot of stuff with Mazda, but my first and only full season was 82, when Dave Kent got the Toyota. And I drove the 98 Fastback, and Lee Mueller drove the 92 Notchback. So I'll kind of just sign off saying this right now. For me, it was almost like an IROC series. it was kind of a real spec series of the Rainvilles and the Dohertys and the Bishop and all those guys. They had an interesting format because many of the pictures, if you look back at coming out of turn six at Riverside, it almost looks like an accordion and all the various cars and headlights. We all were like a piece of binder paper for not just one lap, but from almost the green to the checker. And I thought if you could drive well there, and Mazdas had reliability and the Porsches had reliability, it would help you handsomely in your career if you stayed out of the way of the Fitzpatricks and the Busbys and all that. And it was a brilliant series and one I'll always cherish. So that's a little bit of what I...
That's a great...
I can't agree more. Yeah.
Just one other thing. It seemed to me that the respect you would get from the GTX and the GT drivers and the GTO cars, if you held your line and you had almost Blue Angel discipline in terms of traffic management, it would help out handsomely at the end of the race. And I know that I always tried to go on team orders. I also drove with Jim Meter as... but I drove in the GTO category for a full year with Pete Halsmer. And when Halsmer had an IndyCar conflict, I was covered. I had John Morton drive. So there's an awful lot of what I would consider my heroes and superstars. And it was a hell of a series. And I forever will just be very honored that I didn't do a lot of full seasons, but anytime there was a long race, I was very proud to get a phone call, and they throw me in.
Yeah. This is Jeff Klein. I think 79 was the first year the RX-7 showed up, and Jim Meter had built I actually co-drove. Jim Meter actually drove, myself and Don Sherman, who was a editor of something for, I think, Car and Driver, Road and Track, and anyway, the cars were all brand new, and I was lucky enough to get the ride because a friend of mine that had worked at Hyde Park Motors as a mechanic when I was driving the BMWs and club racing went to work for Jim Meter and Racing Beat, and I literally had to go down and have a full-on interview with Jim Meter and Oku, you know, as if I was getting a job as a traveling salesman. And anyway, we went down there and they just got the car finished. And we went down there without any testing. And I remember Meter telling me not to worry, because if the engine blew, they had it all with quick releases and everything, and they could fix the engine in 10 minutes. So I said, well, where's the spare engine? And he said, well, we got to go get it over at the airport. It's coming in. So I thought it was coming in on the freight. It came in down the conveyor belt. One of the mechanics brought it in as luggage, just the bare engine, and it rolled down a 45-degree luggage conveyor and hit the side of the roundy thing and put a dent in it the size of a pineapple. And we couldn't pick that thing up and get out of there. But the point was, about 3 o'clock in the morning, the engine broke. And about 7 o'clock in the morning, we were finally driving out with the engine changed. So that 10-minute engine change wasn't very applicable. But anyway, Racing Beat was fun to be with. Jim Meter was, you know, now that I look back, I think maybe he was a little bit of an Asperger's syndrome. He wasn't very happy, you know. He didn't interrelate. And he was a hard guy to kind of wind up, but Oku was the salt of the earth. And we had a bunch of mechanics that Mazda sent over from Japan. And one of the guys, he disappeared on Thursday and didn't show up again until Saturday when the race was starting. So Oku said to the guy, he said, where have you been? And the guy just looked at him and said, I smoke dope. And we just laughed our butts off, and I guess they sent him back to Japan. He never surfaced again.
I think they call that hari-kari. Seppuku.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It was pretty funny, but Racing Beat was a lot of fun. You know, I don't want to bore you with my stories, but I drove with John Morton, and I were driving together at Mosport in 1980 for Racing Beat. I did the full season, and Bourne did the full season. We were teammates. And then Jim Downing came in to drive with Walt Bourne, and John Morton drove with me. And anyway, John and I decided to make the race the Targa Florio, and I would be Nino Vaccarella, and he would be Tazio Nuvolari. And we started speaking in Italian accents all the time. And Jim Meter, it just drove him crazy that, you know, he would say, "What's the car doing?" And we go, "Well, she's kind of understeering a little bit in a turn of eighth and in the Massa corner." And it just drove him nuts. And but we kept it up. And even to this day, when I talk to John or he talks to me, I talked to him last week, I'm Nino and he's Tazio. So we're having the pre-race, I don't know what you call it. It's not a debrief. It's a kind of a plan at the pre-race. And we're in the motorhome, and it's Oku and myself and John and I and Downing and Bourne. And Jim's holding this meeting, and he goes, "Okay, you driver pairs, listen up." And John and I reached out and held each other's hands. And Meter just had a apoplexy. But John and I, poor Jim Downing, crashed the car, the first car, the 7 car, because Meter made us run with the windows in all the time. And it just, you know, Mazda, it just got so hot. So poor Downing passed out about halfway into his first stint and crashed the car.
Hey, we got Joe Carney and Amos here.
Oh, good.
Oh.
I'm here.
Hello.
So anyway, let me, if I can finish this just real quick.
Please, Bruce.
Please do.
Stu Hainer.
I didn't mean that the way
it sounds. Hey, Stu. Good. We've been treading water waiting for you guys. But anyway, so we're in Mosport, and we, you know, Bourne ends up running with us in the 17 car. And we, the three of us, win the six-hour race. And John and I are doing the radio interview in Italian. And we have all the garlands and the cups, and we're walking up the pits, and we're going, "Kiss of the winners, kiss of the winners." And, of course, the Canadian women are very happy to see us. And we were kissing all the girls and going up. And I think Meter didn't take it as funny as we did, but... And now that Vardy's on the phone in about a half hour, comes back to me, and I'll tell you a good Joe Vardy story about Mosport, where I co-drove with him. But anyway, hey, John. Hey, Joe. Jeff, here.
Hey, Jeff. How are you doing, buddy?
Good, man. I miss you.
I miss you, too. Yeah.
Well, before we cry, someone else take up. I don't want to take up all the time.
Lance, have you talked yet?
Not yet.
Take it away.
So I started out in GTU in 89. A good friend had gotten one of the teams with Mazda, John Overton, and he gave me the opportunity to drive one of the cars. And it turned out he actually bought the Clayton Cunningham backup car. Probably a car that Tommy and, you know, a couple of the other guys had probably already driven. This was in 89. And we rebodied it with the newer bodywork and had a pretty successful season. Kind of an interesting group of guys. Tony Woodford, that does ADWR, was the main mechanic. And a guy named Bob Hubbard was the manager of the team, did a great job. He was really, really good with all the Mazda components and the PBR trannies, all that stuff. And we had a good enough year that Mazda asked me to drive the factory car in 1990, and I was able to win the championship that year. So it was a pretty fun year, and I had some good races. One of the reasons it's good to see Stu on here, he and I had some great history that year, including him driving my car after I got an opportunity to drive the GTO car after I'd clinched the championship. But, yeah, it was a fun time. Really enjoyed it. It was a great series, great cars, lots of competitors, and some really, really great drivers.
And Bob Hubbard was very good. he had been a crew chief of mine. Yeah, this is Amos. Yeah, Bob Hubbard was my crew chief for a while, so he had helped us build cars from scratch. When we raced the first tube-frame RX-7, we built it in 1984, December of 84 into January, and Bob was very, very instrumental in getting that car built. It was the first IMSA tube-frame car, and we built it in 1 month, just over 1 month, took it to Daytona, and got there late, but managed to get it on the grid, and it went out and won the first its first race, Daytona 24 Hour.
Wow.
So that was a pretty good start to it. And the car, funny, we got the car back home, and in the rain, Jack Dunham had been one of the co-drivers. We had Yojiro Tirada and Jack Dunham, and Tirada had picked up some glass in his eye. We got hit in the windshield and had to change the windshield, but he had glass in his eye, and he refused to get out of the car until he finished his turn behind the wheel. And then they took him to the infield hospital and took a chunk of glass out of his eye. But when we ran the race, and part of it was in the rain, and the car was a real handful. Dunham came in and said, I can't keep it on the track. Anyway, we won the race and won our class, and went then home and immediately started working on it, and found out that when we got the front subframe, which was a super speedway stock car subframe, they had just laid the steering arms up on the knuckles and put a bolt through them to package it all up. And we found out that they should have bolted under the arms instead of on top of them, and that got the bump steer right on, but it was really off during the race. It was a handful, but the car that was the first GTU car that I built, or my team Highball, couldn't beat them, but they built, and that car went on to win 4 consecutive 24 hours at Daytona, same car. But that wasn't my first adventure with the RX-7. Damon Barnett, I was running real friends with Roger Mandeville, and he had driven with me in an Opel in way back at the VIR first FIA under 2-liter touring car, first VIR IMSA race, and Roger and I won that. So I guess that counts as a under 2.5. But anyway, Roger had become a real good friend of mine. I did a lot of dyno work for him when he was racing his Mazda. And Damon Barnett, the Mazda guru, had called me up one time, and he said, look, Roger told me to give you a call because it seems Tom Walkinshaw was supposed to drive with us at the 1980 24-hour race, and he was snow skiing and broke his leg, so he can't drive. Would you be interested in driving the factory car? Well, of course I would. Yeah. So I drove with Alan Moffitt and Stu Fisher and the 1980 24-hour race, and at the end of 18 hours, we were in 5th overall with the car, and I was in it when it started having problems, and they would try everything to keep it running, but finally it died on me out on the track. It was all over. But the car was so fast that IMSA flapped 400 pounds of weight on it before we got to Sebring. So when we got to Sebring with it, they said, well, you got to have these 400 pounds of weight if you're going to run in GTU. And Damon Barnett said, okay, put us in GTX. So we actually ran the car in GTX at the 12 hours at Sebring. That was my start with Mazda, really, in that. And then it just carried on from that. And, you know, what can I say? The car we built, and it was built with stock car parts because I had been doing some stock car racing, and I knew we were going to run endurance races. Back then, almost all the races were co-driver, you know, long races. So we built it with stock car parts, and it was strong. I mean, we had hubs that would carry a 3,400-pound stock car for 500 miles or 600 miles, so you couldn't hurt them. As a matter of fact, I think we ran the same front hubs 4 years in a row. Never had any problem, never had any bearing problems. Just repack them every now and then.
Wow. And Bob Hubbard built that car with you, Amos?
Bob Hubbard built that car with us. He said, we got to have air jacks on this thing, and he said, I'll make them. So he just ordered up some aluminum tubing and some rubber seals and got on the machines back there in the shop, and voila, we got our own air jacks that were made to fit on that car. And he even made spares for them. You know, that's just the way Bob was. He could make anything, you know, just give him some parts, give him some money to buy the parts that he needed, and he would machine the rest of it. But he was doing great. He had one incident. We were running at Elkhart Lake, and I was due in for a pit stop. And when I got to the pits, there were people running around all over the place, and I found out that Bob had been on the pit wall. And when he saw me coming, he had his eye on me, and he just neglected the fact that there was a GTP car coming up the pit lane, and it hit him and turned him a flip, broke his arm. So we had to get him. Huh?
I remember that.
Yeah, well, that was we went on to do well. We always did well up there. We did well at the long tracks. The short tracks weren't so good for that car. But I think that was long about 1986, 87. But we finally built a faster car, a short track car, and ran it. I think Dennis Shaw drove it at a short race up in Cleveland, Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio. We ran a street race up there, and Dennis drove it one time, and then we went to Del Mar with it, and it was so lightweight that we were able to run the small engine, the 12A engine, and we were cranking out, I think, about 310 horsepower, but you had to keep it up on revs. And we set the gears so that we could run all five gears on the track. And that car, I started about fifth or sixth with it, and I got to first place, and I was leading the race on the last lap. Unfortunately, Tommy Kendall wanted to get around me, and I wound up bouncing off a wall and having another car run over top of me, and it pretty much destroyed the car. But the Mazda guy said, you did such a good job with that car, I won't give you the money to fix it. But when you fix it, I want you to put the MX-6 body on it. So we took it back home, and we turned it into an MX-6. And I think the first race the MX-6 won in GTU was at Mid-Ohio. Yeah, won a race with Mid-Ohio. That same car, we wound up putting a V6 Mazda in. We had a Again, Mazda Man says we want to know what our piston engine can do. So we'll give you a little bit of extra money if you'll do something with the 929 three-valve D6. So we built one of them. We got about 340 horsepower of that, and we put that in the MX6, and wound up, I think, finishing second was the best we ever did with that. And then Mazda kind of gave up on GTU.
We're going to take a commercial break here. And now a word from our sponsor. This is Race Talk with Trish, brought to you by Dave Wallen and the Racing History Project. All our shows are recorded, and you can listen to them forever on the Racing History Project website. Thank you. Who's next? We got Joe Vardy.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you. I don't know much I could add to any of that, those stories.
Well, everybody's story's different.
Yeah, they are.
Well, I'll tell you why Joe is so fast, because he told me one time that it took less time for impulses to go from his foot on the gas pedal to his brain and then down his arms. You told me that, Joe.
It makes sense.
That was pretty funny, wasn't it?
I thought you were right. You were
nice. Nice to hear you guys. Nice to hear all you guys.
Yeah.
Brings back good memories. Good memories.
You got a funny story about any of these people?
Well, Jeff Klein.
Oh, no.
Board, but you got to let him tell the story because it's a little hazy to me. But he would tell the story better.
You mean the one about Mosport?
Yes, the one about Mosport.
Well, Joe and I did 8 races together, and I think we were really compatible. I mean, just as a starter, I always felt like Joe was the talent of our era in IMSA, and it's a shame he never got an opportunity to drive big GTP cars for real, because I think he would have been the best. Anyway, my wife is the biggest Joe Vardy fan on the planet, and we were racing up in Mosport, and Harry Haggard was the crew chief, and it was Joe's car, and I was the co-driver. And so, you know, we spent the whole of Saturday doing whatever you do on Saturday out at the racetrack, you know, and the car was fine, and we go back to the hotel. And I'm kind of a physical fitness nut, so I was going to go out for a run. And I go by the hot tub, and my wife and Joe are in the hot tub, and they toasted me as I went by. So I thought, okay. And, you know, I came back about an hour later, and they're still in the hot tub. And then, anyway, we all go out to dinner, and we come back, and we go to the nightclub that was in the Holiday Inn there in Mosport. And Joe and Judy are out in the dance floor like two chihuahuas on diet pills, and they're bouncing around and stuff. So I thought, boy, my wife's sure having a good time. Anyway, so the next morning we get up Sunday for the race, and, you know, my wife's not feeling too good. And we get out to the racetrack, and Joe turns to me just before the race starts, and he said, "Be ready." And I thought, well, I'm always ready. What the hell does he mean, be ready? Anyway, he starts the race, and, you know, with an RX-7, what is it, like an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half, depending, hour and 45 minutes. Like, we're 35 minutes into the race, and Joe comes in, and he says he's not feeling well. I wonder why. Anyway, so he gets out of the car, and I get in the car, and I drive an hour and a half and come in, and no Joe. So they fill it up, and I go out and do another hour and a half, and Harry Haggard hands me Joe's helmet. And so I have to drive an hour and a half again with Joe's helmet on. And then I come in and do another change, still no Joe. then the car breaks, and I have to come in, and I have a sandwich and a Coke while they're fixing the car, and then go out and finish the race. And when I finish the race, Judy and Joe are hanging over the rail waving at me. You know, Joe went into the trailer and went to sleep for 4 hours. So that was that was the Joe Vardy story. So that was kind of funny, but that wasn't the norm. Joe and I did pretty good. We won Elkhart Lake together, and I think one or two other races. And I remember the last race I think I did with Joe was a race at Elkhart Lake. You guys will remember where, I think it was like 83, where it was absolutely pouring, right? And Joe came in to get rain tires, and I remember I'm standing in front of the car with my helmet on, and he's waving at me to get in the car, and I'm waving him, no way, you know, you're driving, man. So I made up for it. I didn't, you know, let him drive in the rainstorm. It was his car. So, but Joe was a lot of fun to be with. I mean, he was an unbelievably fast driver. And the guys that drive for him now at the place that he's the competition director, they should only know that if they let him get in the car, I'm sure even in his 60s, he's quicker than anybody, you know. So that's
60. I'm 71.
No, you used to be so much younger than I was. Well, I'm sure
right.
At 71. I'm sure at 71 you'd be just as quick, because I still race vintage cars, and I can beat most of the rich guys. I don't think I can beat a real race driver, but I can beat most of the car collectors. So
yeah,
I'm sure you
do
really
drive
well.
The vintage stuff. I still
yeah.
drive in the vintage stuff once in a while.
What are y'all driving?
Yeah, you...
A Porsche GT, GT3R.
Okay.
It's a 2018. In fact, it was the one that was in that movie, Racing in the Rain.
That's not vintage.
No, that's the car that was in the movie.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
I mean, it's yeah, but it's old now. You know, it's an 18.
Yeah.
So
that's with Mark Sandridge.
Yeah. And we still do that with the in the IGT class, the SVRA. So we have a lot of fun doing that. That's what I do in my off when I'm not at the racetrack working.
That's good. Yeah, Joe asked me to drive with Mark Sandridge. He had two, were they 944 sports? And
yeah,
we were in Mid-Ohio, and I was driving the Pontiac GTP light car. And Joe came over before the race. It was a nighttime race, and said, "You want to drive the other car?" And I drove with some English guy that was a Porsche dealer or something. That was, I forget his name. Nice guy. Anyway, I got in the car with no practice, and I was being, it took me about four laps to get up to speed, and it was quite an experience. I'd never driven a car with ABS brakes and anything, so, but Joe always looks out for me.
You did a great job. You did a great job. But we had some good times.
We had lots of good times. We were a running carnival. We had to.
The Bobby and Tommy. Remember the Bobby and Tommy show?
That's what I was just thinking about. Yeah, tell them that story, because we used to drive the Archer brothers nuts.
You tell them the story.
We'd be in the paddock, and we'd see the Archer brothers, and Joe and I were together. So I would get behind Joe and grab his waist, and we'd go, "We're the Archer brothers. We're the Archer brothers." And we'd go buzzing around. You know, like we were connected, like they did in their cars all the time. And they didn't think it was too funny. In fact, Joe and I were the only ones that ever thought anything we did was funny. But we didn't care.
Yeah, I go.
That's not saying a lot, obviously.
I'm Bobby, and he would say, "I'm Tommy," and we would say, "We're the Archer brothers." And we would go around with our hands on our waist like a train running around the pit. They did not like that at all.
Well,
I'm sorry they didn't.
Joe got to be real good friends with this guy, Jim Rothbart. It was really funny. And Jim Rothbart must be, what, 6'6", and Joe's 5'2". And they used to pal around.
Right.
and they pal around together, and we used to call them Master Blaster, if you remember the Under the Thunderdome or After the Thunderdome movie.
Mm-hmm.
With, yeah, there was that little guy that would sit in the top of the big dumb guy, and they were
yep.
Master Blaster, and we used to call Joe and Jim Rothbart Master Blaster. Jim was the big dumb guy, and Joe was the brain.
Wasn't he a rock and roll guitar player or something?
Oh, he passed sure. himself off as about everything, but he actually owned a big satellite TV company, STS Communications. And he was a great guy. He and I won Sebring together in a Camel light car.
Yeah, nice man. Nice man.
Yeah, great. So someone else
Jack
wants to ask some story.
Yeah, is Jack with us? Do we have
Jack
Mr. Baldwin?
Yeah, Jack co-drove with both Barty and me, both.
Well, if he doesn't
time.
Speak up, you get to
yeah.
tell me a funny Jack Baldwin story.
Hey, Jack, it's Joe. Tell him the time I almost burned you. I tried to burn you to the ground at Charlotte. I guess he's not on.
I'm not.
Oh, yeah, he figured out how to unmute his phone, maybe.
That may be.
Yeah.
That may be.
Yeah, I was driving for Harry at Charlotte Motor Speedway, and they decided to turn the race into a endurance race. So they said during the weekend that we needed two drivers. So Jack had retired at the time and from racing, and I called Jack, and I said, Jack, he was the only guy I knew in road racing because I had just started road racing. I said, Jack, why don't you come here and drive with me in this GT car? In the GTU car at Charlotte. So he came on down. Well, he gets in the, I do the first stint. He gets in the second stint. And he ain't been, so nobody knows who Jack is. And Harry says, are you sure this guy's going to be able to go fast? And I said, no problem. And Jack hadn't driven a car, I don't know, 5-6 years. It took him about 3 laps, and he was on the number. And during the race, he blew a left rear tire and took the dry brake out of the fuel cell, and the car caught on fire.
Oh, God.
And he was on the front stretch on fire, rolling around, and we thought that was pretty funny. It wasn't really funny. We just thought
hardy,
it was funny.
Hard, hard.
Yeah, we thought it was pretty funny. At the time.
He probably did that just to see you laugh.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It took that dry brake right out of the fuel cell, the tire just stripping. It just took the dry brake out. That wasn't engineered exactly perfect.
Yeah, that could happen. Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty funny. I mean, it wasn't funny, but... Too bad Jack's not to tell the story because I think he's still got some scars over it.
Ow.
Amos and I drove two races together at Daytona and Sebring in 1982, and we ended up winning
yeah,
Sebring
right.
with Roger Mandel.
Got a first place out of Sebring.
Yeah,
yeah, first place at Sebring.
And I Roger asked me to come, and then I ended up, believe it or not, sharing a room with Nancy and Roger and myself, which, talk about uncomfortable. And Roger was really Roger was a big smoker at the time, and I was shocked to see that both of them got up about in the middle of the night to have a cigarette. It was the weirdest thing I ever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, it was great. Your wife, Bunny, is the salt of the earth. She is wonderful.
Yeah.
That was a good time. We had a good time.
And we won.
And we won, yeah.
Yeah, right. That makes it even better time. Yeah, you can have a lot of good times at the race, but if you win, that makes it a whole lot better.
It does. I bounced around a lot. I mean, I ended up winning GTU with 10 different drivers 10 different times. You know, it's strange. So, anyway, I won GTU in, what is it, 81 with Bill Cole. Do you remember? You guys remember him? And he,
he had the Porsche, right?
Yeah. And we finished third overall and first in GTU. And we, it was one of those deals where he had the, these two guys, Cagle and I forget the other guy's name. And so the first race, Bill shows up with like lizard skin boots and a big belt buckle and diamonds on it and all that. And by the end of the season, the guy who was preparing the car had the lizard boots and the diamond buckle.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, racing's like
I'm going to open it up to the audience. If anybody wants to say anything or ask a question, unmute yourself and tell Dave, butch in, and speak to these guys. We got crickets. Anybody else? Oh, come on. Well, they're just starstruck.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, hey. It's Janet.
Hey.
How are you?
Hey, Janet. Hey. I'm fine.
Who was doing the most talking? I think Jack probably had the same problem I did. I couldn't get on the other site. But who was doing the most talking? Is that Rick?
Jeff Klein. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to
talk.
Oh,
it's Jeff. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
guilty as charged.
Since I just hopped on here, it was just kind of interesting how many times you guys were talking about sleeping in different rooms with different people and what in the world? Joe, you've got way more stories, I know.
It just kind of happens like that. We were going out to Riverside to race, and or maybe it was up at Laguna Seca, and Roger had to do something for Mazda, and so he sent me on up with my wife and his wife, and the three of us got a room at Carmel, and we did shopping, did the wine thing, and all of that. And here I was with Roger's wife and my own wife, you know, sharing a room.
Maybe it was a thing with Roger and Nancy. I talk to Nancy all the time. I got to ask her if it was a thing I just missed.
The room sharing goes way back, yeah. SCCA one time, we were racing at Marlboro, and we had one room, and there were about a dozen of us sleeping in this one room. And I got up early. I'm an early riser, and I counted heads just to see how many were in there, and there were 13. And when I came back, there were only 12, but they were the 12 that were supposed to be there. And so we never found out who the 13th was. Somebody slipped in, spent the night in our motel room with the rest of us.
It was dark.
Yeah.
Rick,
well,
you got a story?
To have a room for everybody. I mean, even in the GTU days, you know. I mean, Joe and I shared a room, I remember, at Mosport or other places. You know, so that's, you know, you become friends.
It wasn't a big deal back then. Where there wasn't a lot of hotels around the racetrack. It wasn't a big deal that we all would stack up in a room, you know.
Yeah, Joe was in the Army. I was in the Army, you know. I mean, not the first time you had
I was in the Army.
Yeah, so it's like it was not that unusual. At least it wasn't 36 other people in the same room, right?
We were doing Oldsmobile. We were doing an Oldsmobile GTU car, and I was building it, and they wanted it to be in the wind tunnel up in Detroit. So we took it up there, and Scott Hare was my teammate at that time in the Oldsmobile deal. And so they just had one room for us. for me and for Scott. And after we had spent our 8 hours in a wind tunnel, we grabbed something to eat and went back to the room. It was late at night, and he said, "I got to ask you something." He said, "Can you sleep with the TV on?" I said, "Sure I can. I can sleep anytime." He said, "I just can't go to sleep if the TV's not on." So we turned on the TV. I think it was Godzilla playing or something like that, and with low volume, and we both slept soundly, got up the next morning and went on.
That's amazing. I remember the runoffs, you know, the SCCA runoffs, and this buddy of mine and my best friend, actually, he tows the car down there with me, and my wife shows up later, and we go back to the room, and he's asleep, and I hadn't seen my wife in 5 or 6 days, and, you know, I was in my 20s, and things happened that happened, and later I said to my friend, "I'm glad you were asleep," and he goes, "I wasn't asleep."
Right.
So, anyway, that's what sharing a room is.
Yeah.
Then you get the flip side of it. When I went to Le Mans with Jaguar, they showed me at the race, everyone had their own trailer. You know, I'd never had service like that. I was wondering, I kept waiting for someone to come in to share the trailer with me, and everyone had their own little caravan. Mm.
Caravan, that's what they called them.
Yeah. So,
Rick, you still out there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm trying to figure out. I know when I was asked to drive with Bob Bergstrom, I was kind of running parts for Dave Kent for a while, and I had been to Le Mans, and I was trying to do a little bit of anything to kind of maybe drive that first RX-7 that Creative Carcraft did. And that car was kind of an interesting. It was Frizzell and Brant Dole from Oklahoma, and then a lot of these guys you're talking about tonight were it was pretty revolutionary time, and, you know, anyway, to make a long story short, we ended up driving together, Bergstrom and I, at 1979 at Elkhart Lake for the Pabst Blue Ribbon 500, and it was one of the unique times that the 320i, that David Hobbs and Derek Bell, that was, I know Busby had a version of his, but they were pretty much noted as being almost grenades, you know, that they do exceptionally well at Sears Point and stuff, but at Elkhart Lake it had that just monster straightaway. So anyway, we end up, I don't know, like eighth overall, Bob Bergstrom and I, and we went back to Siebkins, and Dave Kent was colorful, and we were all kind of younger then, and we had kind of one of those just epic food fights that kind of like made Animal House look like a knitting deal. I mean, this thing, there was loads of bread going by, and then we got in the motorboats later that night, and it was Steepkins rocks. The GTU category, I thought, was just, I didn't really do a lot of it, but the ones I did do were the longer races. And Dave Kent was such a magician. God, he was a catalyst for some really smart guys. And I was awfully, I was honored to be around then. And then I ended up doing more races with him and Boren. And then I know Joe Vardy's on board. I even got to drive with Joe up in Portland for a weekend. So I haven't driven with as many people as Jeff Klein has, but I drove with I didn't really have a car assigned to me until 82 when with the Toyota factory and Dave. But up until then, it was neat getting paired with there was a lot of good drivers that were very conscientious in the GTU category. And, yeah, I really, really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think we were so conscientious because we wanted to get out of GTU and get into the bigger cars. So
that was part of it.
Now, that's not true. I had a good career in GTU. I got to GTO a few times. I finally got in a GTP card that I bought, and my sponsor dried up, and I only got to drive it at Daytona in the test days, and it was wonderful Spice, Pontiac Spice. I was down within a couple of seconds of the lap record during the test days, and then got home and found out that the sponsorship money wasn't coming in, and I was happy to be able to sell it to somebody for what I had in it.
Oh,
but I enjoyed being in GTU. I mean, Rick, we had co-drivers, you know, for all the long races. I was out, used to go snow skiing out in Colorado because Buddy and Bob had a lodge out there, and they used to have us, you know, come in and visit all the time at the ski lodge. And we were out there, and Bob told me one day, he said, if you need a veteran driver, you know, for those long races, just give me a call. All you have to supply me with is Pepsi-Cola and peanut butter. And so it just so happened that I did need a co-driver. And so I called him up and said, we'll have you out here to drive with us. He came out and drove with us 3 24-hour races, and we finished first, and third. So he was a pretty good person to put behind the wheel, you know. And his son, Buddy, who wound up winning at Indianapolis, would come along and try to find a ride for him in the 24-hour race. I think he got into one of the Camel Light cars, and the car didn't last long enough for him to even get turn a lap in it in the race. And here his dad goes and wins. Bob was really a great guy. Anyway, you know, we used to go out to the ski lodge, and he was happy to see us, and he'd put us up somewhere. We came off the ski slopes one afternoon, and they caught us as we came by the desk and said, "Don't go to your room." I said, "What do you mean, don't go to the room?" He says, "Bob moved you. Said you're going to be upstairs in their home." So we wound up. I don't know what he did with Buddy, but Bunny and I slept in Buddy's bed for the next two nights while we were up there. So that was a pretty good deal.
And I hate to interrupt, but we're fixing to run out of time. This has been really, really neat. Usually I give an announcement as to what is who our guest will be on our next episode, but I'm going to leave this up to Dave. Dave, are you going to announce this?
Yeah, we're doing an interesting thing. The next show in 2 weeks will be at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, and our guest will be John Fitzpatrick, live from the United Kingdom. So that'll be a cool thing, and hopefully we'll get the connection to work. We're not sure about that.
I hope it does work. If not, we're going to have to call all these guys back in at the last minute to give us another go-round.
I'm retired. I have plenty of time.
yeah, I am too. I think we all are, actually. I think we're all pretty much in the same.
Joe's not, yeah.
Joe's
I'm
not.
Just tired. Yeah, I'm just tired.
Perpetually tired. No, I still hang out over at Downing World, so I've got a part-time job over there. But anyway, this has been a really marvelous evening. And I thank you for all the great stories and for our audience for joining us for this. Tune in 2 weeks for John Fitzpatrick live from the UK at a different time. So pay attention to our Facebook post about what's coming up. And the one after that is going to be fun, too. And I need to nail that down, but it looks like it might be Price Cobb and Rob Dice, but working on that one. Okie dokie, darlings. It's been lovely. I'm waiting for the robot to come in and tell us that we're going to stop recording. But Joe, thanks so much for dropping in. You added a lot to
it. You're welcome.
Everybody had great stories about you, and whether you joined us or not, they would be telling stories about you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's an honor to be with all these legends.
I used to see you at the track. You didn't know me, but I knew who you were. And I thought you were cute. So.
I don't remember I am most of the time, but I'm old now.
Well, you knew what you were doing, too. I could tell.